Welcome back. We're in conversation with Dr. James Shapiro, Director of the Clinical Islet Transplant Program at the University of Alberta, Clinical Research Professorial Chair in Transplantation. And once again, I'd like to thank you for joining us today, Dr. Shapiro.
It's a great pleasure, Barry.
Were there any particular side effects to the effects of transplantation with the anti-rejection drugs? For the population that you studied, what were the outcomes for them? How well have they fared?
Okay, so in terms of safety, giving an anti-rejection drug, I mean, our first worry when we began the trials in our transplantation in our own center was that would we be giving too much immunosuppression? Would we subject patients to excessive risk of infections or cancers or post-transplant lymphoproliferative disorder, a kind of cancer that occurs in transplant patients? And would we lead to death? So the good news, I think, from our experience in Edmonton and then the experience from this multi-center trial is that the treatments overall are relatively safe and didn't lead to any disastrous consequences in that regard. So in other words, we were encouraged by that. But on the other hand, when you do an international multi-center trial and it's under the jurisdiction of the FDA and it's regulated by the National Institutes of Health, there is very, very stringent reporting of every single side effect that occurs in a patient, from down to do you have a chipped nail, yes or no? Do you get mild headaches, yes or no? Do you get diarrhea, yes or no? So as you can imagine, there were many, many side effects that were possibly related to therapy or maybe not even related to therapy at all that were recorded and documented as part of the trial. But having said that, I don't want to make excuses, but there were definitely side effects related to the immunosuppression drugs. Some patients tolerated these drugs very well. Other patients really struggled. Some patients got bad headaches. Some patients got severe bad mouth ulceration, particularly from the high doses of the drug sirolimus that we used. Other patients got peripheral edema. Some female patients got some ovarian cysts. I could go on and on. Mm-hmm. The list is quite extensive. But the trade-off for most patients was that the side effects, in fact, were quite manageable, and in some cases the drug therapies were changed to different drugs which had a completely different profile of side effects and therefore proved better for some patients.
Now, how many of these patients ended up without needing to use insulin, that the islet cells took over and were able to produce sufficient quantities for them to have control over their disease?
So the strict measure, this was actually the primary outcome measure of the trial at 1 year after the final transplant. And across the board, for all of the 9 centers, the total was 44%, which on the surface of it doesn't sound as good as what we achieved in Edmonton, which initially was the 100% success, and mm-hmm. then with our subsequent experience, was about 70% success at 1 year. But when you put that into the context that I just gave you of some centers making islets for the very first time and other centers giving the anti-rejection drugs for the first time, in fact, that's a pretty good result for the first ever international multi-center trial in islet transplant, and also given the background previously of an 8% or less mm-hmm. Success at 1 year. And then if we look at the combined outcomes for insulin independence at 2 years, it was 58% of patients overall were able to achieve and maintain insulin independence. So again, pretty good results, not perfect by any means. But I think what we learned, probably more important than anything from this trial, is that insulin independence, being completely free from any injections of insulin, isn't necessarily the be-all and end-all for a patient with type 1 diabetes, particularly the patients we selected for this trial who had very brittle and difficult-to-control diabetes. In other words, the patients were very susceptible mm-hmm. to dangerous lows in blood sugar. Because what we did find is that even though patients were not completely free of insulin, and by that I mean they were using tiny amounts of insulin or small amounts of insulin at various time points when they went back on insulin, they still had regulated endogenous C-peptide and insulin secretion from the islet transplants inside the liver. And because these cells continue to function and they are able to monitor the blood glucose instantaneously and shut off when the blood glucose goes low and increase their insulin output when the blood glucose goes high, because they can respond immediately, whereas an injection of insulin from the outside cannot respond in that way. When you put a depot of insulin under the skin and it's absorbed either slowly or rapidly, depending on the type of insulin, the physiology of what an islet transplant can accomplish is phenomenally different from mm-hmm. that of an injection. So these patients were completely protected from any dangerous lows in blood sugar, provided they had ongoing islet function. And more than 70% of patients had ongoing islet function out of the 2-year mark.
And my final question to you is what are the next steps? Now that this area of research, this study has been completed, what would you like to do now to forward this research? What would you like to see happen? What would be the goal for you in this case?
Okay. So islet transplantation today is a useful therapy. It's useful for patients with very brittle and difficult to control diabetes. But we're falling far short of the mark of where I would like to be. You know, one day I'd like to be able to say islet transplants or cellular replacement therapy for diabetes is here to stay as a cure for diabetes. But I think right now we fall quite short of the cure. We fall short because the patients face side effects, so we can't really, in fairness, offer it to every single patient who could benefit, because the trade-off against side effects of the treatment versus side effect of diabetes doesn't necessarily favor the transplant for every patient. So I think what we have to do is make the treatment still safer and have far less side effects from the anti-rejection medications than we have already. So our next step, our immediate next step, is to use a brand new approach to anti-rejection therapies. And there is a new therapy available now called belatacept, or its other name is LEA29Y. It's a new class of compound. It's a monoclonal antibody, and it's called a co-stimulation blockade. It interferes with the way the T cell, which is responsible for rejection, becomes activated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very effective in kidney transplant patients. There are a series of patients now who've had kidney transplants in trials with this therapy. The side effects are extremely minor compared to some of the more serious side effects that we encountered with the drugs that we gave in the Edmonton protocol. And so we're very excited to test that in islet transplantation. But I think the islet transplants will function even better, and I think the side effect profile will be far, far superior than what we're giving today. So in other words, I think with that one step alone, we'll be able to open up the therapy perhaps to include children and perhaps to move much earlier in the course of the disease and not have to pick the worst of the worst patients. Then I think we've got the challenge of how do we possibly get enough cells to go around. And I would emphasize that, in fact, although people think there aren't enough cells to go around at present, for example, in Edmonton at our own center, we're actually short of patients right now. We have more islets than we have patients. Our list, we've transplanted, you know, perhaps the worst brittle patients that we can find, and now we're certainly actively looking for new patients for transplants. So if there is somebody listening who has type 1 diabetes that has some difficulty with their control, they shouldn't think that an islet transplant is out of their realm. Certainly, we're desperately looking for Canadian patients for our transplantation program in Edmonton. But the next step to improve the way the islets work is to try to improve the way they survive after transplantation. Now, we know that the process of extracting the islet from the pancreas is a complex one. It involves enzymes called collagenase to distend the pancreas and separate the islets out from the rest of the exocrine pancreas, because the pancreas itself, 97% of it consists of the digestive portion of the pancreas, and only 3% really regulates the control of insulin and of the hormones from the islets. So our goal really is to make sure that the islets, after they've been extracted from the pancreas, can really survive and then graft into the liver or perhaps into some new sites that we're trying to develop presently. And we know that the islet, when it's transplanted today into the liver, into the portal vein, probably only 25% of the cells that we transplant end up engrafting and getting a new blood supply and really settling in. And the rest of them really struggle to function. So I think there are some approaches to improving that. And one of them is a therapy that we've been exploring now in the laboratory, which can interfere with the way an islet dies. In other words, there are these pathways inside the islet called apoptosis pathways, death pathways. And we have some specific drugs now that can switch those pathways off. And when we test these in mice and we test them in larger animal models, and we're in the process of doing that presently, we think we can have a huge impact in the number of islets that engraft. In other words, that then affect quite dramatically the number of cells that can really function and secrete insulin long term. So I think what's going to happen with these two steps, we'll have islets working far better, we'll need fewer islets for each patient, we'll have much higher rates of short and long-term insulin independence, and we'll have far fewer side effects from the therapy. And when that happens, I think we'll be a huge step forward from where we are even today.
Well, Dr. Shapiro, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the opportunity of discussing islet cell transplantation. Extremely exciting research, and I look forward to having you back on the air as research progresses.
Thank you, Barry. I enjoyed talking with you.
All the best.